and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability fun news, facts and reviews brought to you by The Green Elephant. This week, 2020 was the hottest year ever. Where is the best place to live if you're vegan? An interview with Circular Computing on all things tech recycling. And would you wear the same dress for 100 days? Joining me to discuss these and more, as usual, is Russell. Morning, Russell.
Now, I'm not going to become stereotypical over this, Mike, but I'm afraid I will not be wearing the same dress for 100 days.
I was thinking that might be our February challenge, but it would have to be February, March and April challenge, wouldn't it?
I would definitely want it to be longer than knee length. Anyway, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. Also coming up are our tech challenge, eco tips, video recommendation and a guest edition of Fact or Fake. We'll also be talking about e-waste, Donald Trump, Greta Thunberg, Boris Johnson, electric cars, battery storage, cars, bikes, leaves, corals, bees, zero, zero, and zero.
Right.
Yeah, so the global average temperature in 2020 was about 2.25 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than the average from 1850 to 1900. This was data from the Copernicus Climate Change Service, and this is an annual report on global temperatures. So last year, 2020, effectively tied 2016 as the hottest year on record. The record warmth, which fueled deadly heat waves, droughts, intense wildfires, and other environmental disasters around the world in 2020. While 2020 may tie the record, all of the last 6 years are among the hottest ever. And I see in the news this week, if people haven't seen it, there have been landslides in Indonesia, forest fires still going on. So it's proof, if anybody were in doubt, that, you know, global warming is here at the moment, here to stay, and is going on in every year.
The best we can hope to do is probably slow it down. Stopping it is not really within our abilities, especially at the moment. And it's a horrific story. It's interesting looking at the graph that they published that in 2018, there was a substantial dip, funnily enough. But all of it generally stays, and the graph is quite clearly got a trend.
Yeah.
Quite and dramatically up.
Yeah, it's a graph we'll post on the show page, and we'll also post it out to social. But it is a steep upward curve from 1970 through to 2020. So it's a worrying and a trend that it isn't stopping, really.
It felt
in particular parts of the world, so places like the Arctic and Siberia. And wildfires in Siberia. It's just bonkers. You know, for me, Siberia when I was younger was cold and icy, and you didn't go there because you froze to death.
Were you sent to Siberia in your younger
days? Well, you know, I was a difficult teenager, you know.
that's a hard piece of punishment.
It was an expensive flight, but my parents thought it was worth it to cool me down for a bit.
You're off to the mines in Siberia, boy, if you carry on like this.
It's not a bad news story or a good news story. It's a story about science. So the Copernicus Institute, they are just scientists recording data and publishing that data every year. And so they're not saying good, bad, any kind of political statement on what's happening with the environment or what we should do about the environment. All they're saying is this is the change in temperatures recorded around the world in the last 12 months. So, you know, they're not trying to push a message, trying to, you know, make any political gain out of this.
Or necessarily explain how it came about. It's just, that's what we're getting. It is quite balanced, a report.
If anybody doesn't agree with the data, there's also a second report coming out from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and NASA, a joint report between NOAA and NASA, NOAA's much easier to say, NOAA and NASA, which takes a similar approach, really, you know, thousands of different temperature measurements from around the world. And no doubt when that comes out, that will display a similar message.
Yeah, I mean, this report has links through to the El Nino meteorological or I don't know what it is. It says something that supercharges the Pacific Ocean or uses the heat from the Pacific Ocean to supercharge global temperatures. And and we've heard of El Nino storms, and they refer to that. So presumably we'll see Pacific temperatures changing, height fluctuating in that next report. So we're interested to see if it all aligns.
So those of you following this show will know that we do a series of monthly challenges, and we're currently in the middle of our January tech challenge. And we've got an interview coming up later in the show with Steve Haskew from Circular Computing, who are experts in technology remanufacturing and repurpose. But we mentioned last week that we've got some of our own old tech that we need to reuse and recycle. And there are a couple of items that we did a bit of work on this week. One was an old iPhone, and I put a request out on social, Russell, for what should I do with an old iPhone. And I was relieved with the responses, because
they were polite.
The responses could have been anything, knowing the audience that is out there in social media land. But the responses were actually very sensible and very good. I mean, one of the first things that somebody said was, why not just give it to someone else?
Yeah.
And that might be an option, but I guess given the model is so old, and I've actually got it here on my desk. I don't know if people can see that on the camera. I'll wave it around, but there's the old phone. But the software and the support and the security of that device is, you know, quite outdated now. So it doesn't run all the newest things, may not be patched and up to date. And so giving it to somebody else is, you know, maybe an option, but something I'm a little bit wary of, I think.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? When you know, we know the iPhone 5S has fallen, is now, I think, probably version 11 of iOS or something like that. Go to 10 or 11. And there's a lot moved on, and the world's moved on, and there's a lot more security problems. And so giving somebody an old phone, the other thing is, you know, that age phone is what, six, seven years old now?
Oh, and more. Must be 7 or 8, I would think.
Oh, right. Okay. 7 or 8. I've lost track of my,
I mean, our models, clearly. Our iPhone 7s are 5 or 6 years old.
So yeah, it's so probably could be seven or eight years old.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of time under the bridge there, but we know the batteries degrade. And it severely impacts the ability of that phone to be effective. You know, won't keep a charge for a whole day, or suddenly drops off charge. Mine yesterday, 2 days ago, 23%, 0%. It just had to put it on charge, and then it was up to 100% in 30 minutes, and that's just not right either. So if you're going to give something on, you need to probably remount or fix it a little bit, give it a little bit of a spruce up and send it on. And
we had a number of other suggestions, taking it to an electronics store that recycles old devices, and this came from evidently Chicken Town and TerraMove. Apparently this is common and mandatory in places like Italy for devices that are 25 centimeters or less. And that sounds like a brilliant idea, and you know why we don't have that in the UK, I don't know, but being able to take it back to the store and saying you reuse and recycle it. Sustainably K suggests we donate it to a child for homeschooling. So love the idea, but I think for the reasons we've just discussed around security and, you know, viability of doing that, maybe not. Leanne, who we interviewed last week, Leanne Bell, got in touch and said, make Apple take it back for urban mining, which is an interesting concept. And I think we can do better. Also said, return it to Apple. But I think that when you Apple don't actually take their old devices for nothing. I think when people see the refurbished and the reuse, they only do it if you're buying another new Apple device. So, yeah.
Not out of the box. The one thing I would say about Apple is they did quite some time ago start building their devices to be recycled.
Yes.
And to reduce the toxins in the screens and such like.
They just need to take that next step and they need to say recycling themselves.
Yeah, and actually say, we made it recyclable, we'll recycle it for you.
Yeah.
And then use those parts back in their newer phones.
But the really interesting one, which waiting to follow up, was suggested by Angela Monaghan, who suggested we use a fellow B Corp called Reconomy to recycle the phone. So we've kind of started a conversation, and hopefully we'll bring you more about that. The idea of using a B Corp to do the recycling sounds really interesting. So we'll bring listeners update on that one next time, hopefully. As well as the iPhone, I think I mentioned I've got a complete nest of leads and cables, and everybody's got that drawer, that cupboard with that big tangle of old USB or printer or whatever cables it is, old chargers. And there are a number of things that I'm looking at. One is possibly some household recycling centers take them. If they don't take the lead, one thing I might do is strip the plastic off myself, and then I could put the plastic in the plastic recycling and the metal in the metal recycling. So,
do they take that type of PVC?
It depends. Some do, some don't. So I need to visit my local centre and see.
Yeah, I must admit, I do. Seeing this a lot on plastic packaging, aren't you? This is recyclable. This is recyclable. Check with local recycling, check with local curbside. And you're thinking, you're putting the onus. Why isn't curbside recycling the same across the whole country? Why are we battling? It's different from myself and my mum who lives, 50 miles up the road. It's just ridiculous.
Across the world.
And across the world, yeah. I mean, that's just the country.
Yeah. A couple of other ideas for the leads. Apparently, some schools use them for science projects when they're building their breadboards and doing electronics things. They like to have lots of old leads lying around they can use for the students to plug things into other things. So maybe that's an idea. If we're in the US, apparently we could take it into Best Buy. All the Best Buy stores recycle leads, which, again, why the electronics retailers in the UK don't, well, I know why they don't do it, because it costs them money, but they should do it. One idea I might go with is asking if anybody else needs them. Just take some pictures and just say, anybody want these leads, and put them in the post.
I've seen bundles of leads go for nothing, to be fair, on Facebook marketplaces and things. I think it's a little bit of a lucky dip for whoever gets them, but
I was thinking more about saying, I've got this lead or this charger, and saying, does anybody want it, and being a bit more specific than that, and seeing how we go.
Okay, that'll be interesting.
It will be. And there are some e-recycling companies who will pay for your waste. So I've seen a couple of sites that will actually pay you for your leads. So you tell them what you've got, and they, I guess, pay you a few pennies or a few cents for taking your leads off your hands.
Okay.
So, yeah, numbers of options.
I look forward to your success. Yes, I'm keeping all my cables.
Okay. Well, just
I jealously
in case.
Guard them. I was going through my cables the other day, and I found a SCART cable, and I went, maybe one day I'll put it back again. And I can't imagine whenever I'll use a SCART cable, but it was a good quality one.
Yeah, you'd never be too sure. But anyway, I will follow up some of those with my leads, and we'll keep following down with the iPhone, and we'll let you know how we get on with recycling those elements. So it seems at the moment, Russell, that everybody is doing Veganuary. Loads of people.
They're
copying our November challenge, aren't they?
November challenge.
We did it first. But let's say, for example, you fall in love with the whole vegan lifestyle and you decide that you need to move somewhere more vegan friendly. Right. Where is the best place you could go?
Well,
you don't need to worry about it, Russell, because the website Chef's Pencil has done its annual list of the best cities and countries for vegans. And it's actually quite good news for the UK, but actually the best city in the world is Portland, Oregon.
Oh, right.
Well done, Portland. Yeah, absolutely. Well done. But it goes back to the top after having been Bristol in the UK. And that's not surprising, actually. Bristol, UK, I think it's a very multicultural, vibrant,
up-and-coming
young city.
Yeah.
A lot of kind of, I think the Green parties do quite well in Bristol, so it's quite...
And it's quite a good place for attracting people in to visit. It's quite nice. It's got a bit of history. It's got a little bit of stuff to look at, and it's nice dockside. So I can understand that. I've been up there because we've got family live there. But it's a nice place. But they've fallen from grace.
They have, yeah. They're out of the top 15 this year. So apparently, one of the reasons why Portland was top is that there's more than 10 places where you can get vegan ice cream, and they've got specialty vegan restaurants and vegan Sri Lankan restaurants. So Edinburgh, Scotland, took the number two spot.
And like we do, of course, whenever Scotland gets good at something, we say, well, that's part of the UK. So
it is, yeah. They're UK on that way. But Germany did really well. So third, fourth and fifth was Hamburg, Berlin and Leipzig. Amsterdam was next. Vancouver, Manchester, London and Seattle completed the top 10. So, yeah, really interesting. If you want to be more vegan or live the lifestyle, those are the cities to go for. In terms of the countries, the UK was the most vegan-friendly country for the third year in a row, apparently.
Mm.
Australia second, New Zealand third, I think. Austria, Germany, Switzerland, Sweden, Canada and Ireland. But interestingly, the US not making it into the top 10.
I'm kind of intrigued. I haven't looked into details how Chef sharpened their particular pencil.
Yeah.
Do chefs have pencils? Presumably
they do. Yeah.
To poke chickens with or something. And but there. What was the country selection to start off with? Because if you look at places, I don't know, like India and Sri Lanka, they are. They eat a lot of vegetables. They're not big meat eaters anywhere, and kind of could fall quite naturally into a more vegan diet.
So it looks like the data was made up of a number of things, from kind of trends, news, recipes, restaurants, those kind of things. I guess if you are in a third world country with not many restaurants and it's not talking about itself as a vegan place, then maybe you might suffer under this.
You're naturally vegan and you don't make a big thing of it. Okay, so we're talking probably more developed developed countries. Well, fair enough. I'm quite happy to be living in the UK. We're doing quite well. Come on, US, you're ranked number 12.
You're letting us down.
57. You're letting us down as you part are. Of the developed world. Come on.
Absolutely. So let's take a look at some other big sustainability news stories from the week. And I think, is it going to be one of the last few episodes when we talk about Donald Trump? I'm not sure. Hopefully. In his last few weeks of office,
it's
not too late to... to do more damage to the planet in the last throes of presidency. So granting of Arctic drilling rights for big oil companies has been sold off this week. So
what can you say, really? It's just bonkers that this
yeah
guy would allow it to happen. The downside or the upside is most of the oil companies kept away.
Yeah.
because it's like, it was like a hiding to nowhere. Here, buy this really tainted product called the Arctic Circle.
Arctic drilling rights. Yeah.
In Alaska. It's all right. Don't worry. Nobody's looking because I'm leaving soon. So don't worry. Yeah. And but, so it was bid for, and one of the leases were bid for by the state, the own Alaska, the state, wasn't it? So the good news is perhaps they didn't rise to the bait. They didn't raise the money they thought they were going to either.
Kind of linked to the next story, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he continues to have an impact. They've reversed some more legislation. It seemed to be his life goal, which was to devastate all previous things to make the planet just that little bit better. Yeah. And so now these oil companies are now reprotected, or they now can get away with killing thousands of birds without any implications if they want. So an oil spill or any other thing that causes harm to life, they will no longer be taken to court and fined for. Bearing in mind that the BP oil spill,
in
Gulf of Mexico, they got fined $100 million. For the million birds that they killed in that. But that kind of thing won't happen again.
They won't get fined next time.
So. Until Biden... But I think there was also a bit that says that Biden might find it a little bit tricky to overturn this one. Oh, no, that was the drillings, wasn't it? Biden's going to struggle to overturn it because the leases are let. But good old Trump. I sometimes feel that America should look and say, when you're kicking your president out, perhaps you should stop him making laws. And allow him to do stuff. Okay, hiatus whilst we get you out of office.
Well, back to the UK and UK government, Boris Johnson. We talked about his 10-point climate plan a couple of months ago now. I think he announced it. And Greta Thunberg has got in on this one, saying that plan, the UK's so-called Green Industrial Revolution, is off to a great start, and I think she's been sarcastic in that. There's a number of changes, and we'll talk about the change in pesticide laws in a bit. But announcing new coal mines and new mining is not exactly, in line with a green.
We covered that mine opening last time, and they've been given like 20 years to make it break even, because after that they're gonna have to close them down. It is a ridiculous situation. I don't understand why a corporation would take it up, to be honest, but they seem to have embraced it anyway.
But another new deep coal mine, why would you announce a new coal mine, which is obviously going to run for decades, when you're saying you're going to,
be net zero
by 2050 or whatever? It just seems absolute nonsense.
Yeah, it does.
There we are.
More positive news, though, and going over to America, who gets such a good beating. But Massachusetts has said that by 2035, all new cars sold in their city must be electric. Now, this is, this is good, I think.
I think it follows the story last week where Massachusetts are bunging big yellow stickers on everything to say,
don't fill this with gas
because it's
they're doing the right thing. They're going to be a nice, sustainable city. They've always got the problem is that if you want to buy a stinky power car fueled with gas, you can just hop over the border, buy one and bring it back again. But it's a good move. I think, it's like we have found in London when they did put the cordon up around the city centre, the air quality did improve. So any of these small steps, we got to salute, haven't we?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
2035 is a good, well ahead of the 2050.
Thanks to the thin end of the wedge, there'll be more cities to follow.
Yes.
Dove now, the deodorant, not the bird. I don't think there's much plastic in Doves, although there might be.
Well, there probably is now.
There is now. There are, the animals are eating, but they are launching a refillable deodorant. And they're saying that refills use 54% less plastic than regular Dove sticks. The refillable refill, I guess you call it, is made from 98% recycled content, the packaging, that is. So, yeah, great. So a standard, well-known beauty care brand.
Yeah.
Moving to recycled, more sustainable methods of getting its product out there. So, yeah, good.
I think it's good. That's good news. The one thing I would say, and this is probably one not for the teenagers in who are listening, is that I haven't used deodorant for 4 years. Yeah, I haven't used it at all.
That's because we're all working at home now, Russ, and nobody has to smell you.
Four years. You worked side by side with me, no deodorant passing my body. Now, you know, when you get out of the really youngster age, it's possible for you to live without deodorant, people. You don't have to shove stuff under your arm, which has chemicals in it and all sorts of stuff as well. But that's by the by. Let's not go on. Let's move on.
Yes.
To a problem that we've mentioned previously is that the trouble with our power system is it's on demand. You can't pump prime your power system with solar and good renewable energies because people want to turn the kettle on at 10 o'clock at night. In California, Monterey, they have introduced the world's largest utility scale battery storage system, 300 megawatts or 1200 megawatt hours stored in this ginormous three football fields worth of batteries. We won't discuss the impact on lithium stocks and rare metals at this point. The hat off is it charges off solar panel when it's at peak and wind when it's at peak, and then delivers back in the evenings and in the mornings when it's needed most. And that's the most likely time that they flick on the dirty burns.
It was one of the trends we highlighted for 2021 is that it's great. We've got renewable generation. We now need the storage to store that renewable that's been,
when it's
been generated.
There.
So I'm sure we're going to see lots more battery news stories over the year. And another thing we mentioned as a trend that was going to be coming in 2021 was green investment. And Bloomberg and Rockefeller Asset Management, so two huge names in finance and investment, have announced a new index. And indexes are things that people invest money in, and they hope to grow their money in line with the growth of the index. But they've launched an ESG, so that's Environmental, Social and Governance Index. So these are companies that are, you know, doing the right thing in terms of the environment and society. So they've got an index of those companies which they are tracking and people can invest in. So, and again, I'm sure we'll see more of those as we go through 2021.
Yeah, and I've always thought Rockefeller is such a cool name to have. When you look at Russell Rockefeller, it's kind of, I like that. Yeah. We're from rocking to rolling.
Right.
Yes.
I feel a bit crazy now.
Rolling through the streets of London on a bike, which is a very popular activity, especially with the Boris bikes that are dotted all over the place.
A company.
And this is something our investment companies could look at throwing some money into, is tapping your bicycle wheel to filter air pollution out as you drive by, you cycle around.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Don't want to put any more on it. They've come up with something which rips the pollutions out of the air, which has got to be a good thing.
Yeah, and put them on every Boris bike. Sorry, we call them Boris bikes. There's a London cycle scheme. And
yes,
most other cities around the world have, you know, bicycle rent schemes. Just put the wheels on the bikes and filter the air. It just makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. If 10% of all London cyclists had one Rolo installed on their bike, they would filter 267,000 cubic meters of air, 20 times the size of Trafalgar Square. So, I mean, that would be a massive. That's just 10% of all the cyclists. It's brilliant.
It is indeed. What else is good is Nissan Leaf cars, because you can you can plug them in and charge them, but they also do some of their charging as you're driving along. And that charge that you generate as you're driving is stored in the car's battery, but an organization called the Alliance Center in Denver is working with a company called Fermata Energy to use the energy that's stored in these Nissan Leaf cars to power the building. So they've got some bi-directional charging units that not only charge the cars but put it back into the building. So there'll be some huge batteries in the building, but instead of the building drawing power from the grid, it's drawing some of its building, some of its power from the cars that have been driven around. And if you're driving around generating power, why not use that to meet demand in your building in the evening? It's absolute.
It does feel like somewhere there's energy coming out of fresh air a little bit there, but I'm fascinated. There's obviously got to be something far brighter than I trying to work that out. Talking to people brighter than myself, there's now people that build satellites.
Yes, are these the wooden ones from Japan?
Yeah, that's right.
We talked about last week.
We wish. I hope so. One day that we will see the launch of the first wooden satellite. We've seen a lot more where satellites have been employed to start mapping pollution, cloud cover, forest cover,
forest fires,
which you can see live on some sites running right across the middle of Africa.
Yeah.
But of course, now we've got to the point where they've started to map coral reefs under the water. Now, this, to be honest, is pretty amazing, but we don't know where all of our coral reefs are in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And we know they're under desperate threat from the warming waters. And so knowing where they are gives us perhaps a better chance of being able to, and how they are changing and shrinking, perhaps helps us to protect them a little bit more. So there's a project which, of course, you can have a look at if you go to our show page and have a look at the links.
Yeah, yeah. Great, supported by the UN Environment Programme. Yeah, all good. Gene editing now, and with the change of the UK status to a more independent country outside of the EU, some of our laws and controls around environment and food and things like that, we have control of. And one of the things that's soon to be permitted is the gene editing of crops and livestock, and I think that I think it's uncertain, this story. It's we don't know what we don't know about this one. You know, when smoking came in the 20s, 30s, we didn't know that it was going to cause cancers and lung disease. You know, when we bring things in,
we seem to have like an impact. Good
idea at the time, we don't know what the impact is going to be in 20, 30, 40 years time. And, you know, this playing with the natural makeup of food and plants seems an uncertain area, let's say. But it's coming to the UK.
I've seen mixed stuff on it, and some saying actually GM crops have a great opportunity for us to cut out pesticides, which will protect the bees. But
yeah.
As you say, what will we end up with? A triffid soon. Sorry, I won't do the triffid sound. So moving into Saudi Arabia. You mentioned 000.
Yes.
The 000 that Mike mentioned in his intro, zero cars, zero streets and zero carbon emissions.
Yeah, it's zero city, zero people. That would be the best thing. Zero people would be ideal.
Basically, toilets capture you. No, let's not go into that. So this is a zero carbon city that Saudi Arabia are planning, called The Line. And the Crown Prince says that this will be powered by 100% clean energy, and they're going to start in the next couple of months. Its infrastructure will cost between 100 to 200 billion.
Yep.
So it's laying the foundations. They're trying to get away from their dependence on oil. And the best way to do that is to build their cities, prove that they can build a city that that doesn't need cars can run on this totally renewable energy. It's a very sunny country over there. You would hope so, wouldn't you?
You'd hope to get plenty of sun,
And then build on that.
It's the time to do it, isn't it, when you're building your city brand new?
It is. And if you can prove to do it, then you can look at those technologies and say, could we retrofit, you know, another city in this way, or what would it take? Because the trouble is we used to get our electricity from dirty generation units out on town.
Yeah.
And so everything had to travel, and everyone avoided that. And then you had an industry area. They're trying to merge everything because it's going to be clean, zero emissions. Then you can have industry sitting next to the people that run, who work in the industry, living side by side. Because, you know, it could make it's a really interesting concept. And to be honest, if anybody has the money to do it, it's going to be the Saudi Arabians.
Absolutely. Yeah, indeed. Good news from a survey this week from the European Investment Bank. According to their survey, most Europeans are planning to fly less and to eat less meat. And quite a big survey, almost 30,000 people. So that's a sizable survey from 27 countries. Say three quarters of them said they're going to fly less. And almost half, I think, said they were going to eat less meat. So, yeah. Good news. Let's hope that comes to fruition and has some benefits.
I'll probably count myself in on both of those. I mean, we got family overseas, but we will probably restrict ourselves to seeing them irregularly, you know, not so regularly. But, you know, this old nip over for a holiday is going to have to probably come to an end. Going back to that story you touched on.
Greta wasn't happy. And
giving Boris a hard time, and I can see why. There is a pesticide, or is it? I've lost the word, but
lost the name.
a nicotine based pesticide.
a chemical, thiamethoxam.
That's
the one. There's the pronunciation challenge for the week. You're welcome.
It's threatening our sugar beet seeds. I didn't realize we were so reliant on them, but apparently we are. And so they've done a limited release to allow them to use this chemical, which is damaging to bees. And we know bees are important. It's not stupid. We've got a bag with it printed on Save the Bees. And yet our UK government suddenly gets the freedom from the EU, who has banned this.
Yeah.
And we backed about, what, 3-4 years ago, we backed banning these things. Oh, no, it's not working. A bit of money.
I don't get the logic, which says we know this chemical and this pesticide is harmful for bees, and yet we're still going to approve it. Where does that thinking come from? I just don't.
I must admit, when this came up and I watched a couple of things on it, I was kind of incredulous. Why would they do this? Okay, it's 120 days. That's 120 days too long, Boris. You idiot.
Anyway, that's enough berating governments and stories around the world.
Aww. Right, Mike. So I had the opportunity to have a chat with Steve Haskew from Circular Computing earlier this week. And here I am now. As if injected into this week's show with Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Russell.
Thanks for joining us. Very interested in what you do. I wonder, I'm not going to do any big intro, perhaps you could say what Circular Computing, your company, does.
Essentially, Russell, what we do is we take once-used laptops that the market will know as refurbished or secondhand. And we take those into our factory, we disassemble them, we test the subcomponent parts, we then go through a reassemble process, and we bring back to market and back to life the asset to an as-new standard embedded within a compliant ISO called 8887, which protects the user. Our products come with a 3-year warranty. Next to PPE, laptops are in demand right now, so it's very busy.
That's brilliant. And, you know, this seems to be, I've never heard of this remanufacturing. Obviously, we've heard of refurbished kit, usually see that. You take any device? Any laptops?
Any device in, but we actually only remanufacture 7 particular models.
Okay.
We are a global buyer of IT, and we're around for 25 years or so. We have defined our remanufacturing process based on just 7 models, and we'll do those in the production this year. Will be somewhere between 200,000 and 300,000 devices for remanufactured. And then those machines that don't make a remanufactured grade will go down the general second-hand route. And the reason remanufacture is important is it de-risks the buyer.
Okay.
If you're buying secondhand, then as a buyer, you have to kind of figure out, okay, well, where am I going to put my price? Where's my risk? And what we've tried to do is legitimize a not new solution to the buyer, yeah.
That's good, because people, I'm worried about secondhand. Secondhand kit, you always want your new kit. And you want, do you upgrade these on the way through? Because obviously when people got to secondhand, they're presuming that the thing is, you know, no longer fit for purpose.
That's an interesting question, because they think it's just a behavior and it's just a perception.
Yeah.
So the product has been used, but if I sort of use a car assembly as well as a laptop.
Yeah.
Whereas people are used to buying a secondhand car. They don't want to have to pay for a new car.
No.
Yet the servicing of a secondhand car or the servicing of a car means that the risk to the buyer has actually been engineered away by its servicing. Whereas within IT, what we tend to do is use it. We cane the laptop for 3 years and then we dispose of it because we want something else, because we've been told we need something else. Whether we need it or not is up to your user requirements, I suppose. So
yeah.
To take that off the table, what we do is we respray the chassis, we upgrade the components, right, the critical components, so SSD, memory, and so forth.
Right.
Make sure the screen is not blemished. We replace the screen if necessary, and also the battery, if the battery isn't holding its charge or isn't. And our secondhand batteries will be an 80% as new charge. We'll replace the battery as well. And as I say, they come with a 3-year warranty. So the user actually has a standard against which they can make a buying decision.
So presumably that your raw materials as such come from businesses, or do you take stuff from private individuals as well?
In the main, it works at scale for us. So we have relationships with large leasing companies. So if I took a large PLC, might not own their assets personally. They'll finance them through a leasing company or a finance organization that we will buy from the finance organization. And, you know, we have containers of laptops with 5,000-10,000 units turning up at a time, against which then we can commercially do the right thing in terms of remanufacturing. Dealing with ones and twos as an organization is difficult for us. It's not unreasonably not the right thing to do. It's just that we're not geared up to do that way.
No, well, that's right. Because I think, you know, we're going to be talking to somebody in another show with regards to perhaps the more domestic market, where what to do with your ones and twos. But it's interesting because, I mean, I worked in local government for 30 years, and I had to pause on that one because it's a bit scary to think about. But the you know, we had a technical refresh, and after 5 years, you'd get rid of stuff, or 3 years. Are people in business stretching the length of the amount of time they keep their laptops now, or is it still the 3 to 5 year kind of space where they're passing them on to you or to back to their leasing company?
Well, what you had was the relationship between hardware and software, particularly in the tech space,
was
very software led.
Yes.
The hardware had to change because the software was more demanding on it. And to about 2013-14, when actually things shifted to the cloud, the job then was for the software to become ever more efficient to get onto, whether it's a mobile phone, a tablet, or a laptop. Actually, they do the same job. It's a window to the cloud. It's just as a user how you want to physically produce your output. So that will determine whether an iPad is a tablet's good enough, or whether a laptop is what you prefer. For me personally, I prefer using a laptop device.
Yeah. Why not
people that use Android tablets or iPad by Apple as their preferred medium? And so that, then it's just a user experience from the hardware point of view. The hardware is just a window to the cloud now.
Yeah, and that's quite interesting because the demands are, yes, unless you're doing video processing or graphics or something where the software continue, even the cloud software puts a strain on the local device. It is becoming far more able for you to run quite hardcore products in the cloud device.
Yeah, there are jobs now, Russell, where you know power is like deep data analytics, AI, you know, like you say, video content. Like, there are some job functions that do require and will continue to require ever more power. That, and as we get into 5G and the technologies that will come through on the back of 5G, I don't know what those look like just yet, but when they happen, they will require power. So we will see a gear shift again.
Yeah.
But for the majority of people, like you say, in local gov or the white collar workers, you know, those guys like me and you who are just you know doing their day job, they don't need that power. So then the question is, how do you reasonably extend the life of your asset without being compromised as a user? If I go back to my car analogy, it's unreasonable to think I'll buy my car on day one, I'll use it for 3 years, I won't service it, and then I think to myself, okay, well, I'll see if I can use it for a further year or maybe 2 years to get my life out of it without servicing it. So this is the problem. It is unreasonable of us to put the weight of use onto the asset without looking after the asset itself. So remanufacturing does just that. What it does is it keeps the asset alive in a reasonable fashion, whether you have it back. So you can send me your laptop, I can remanufacture it and send it back to you and charge you a service fee.
All right.
Or you could buy a remanufactured device from me as your replacement device.
So, I mean, this is obviously fits very well into our challenge this month is what do we do with our old tech? Or what should we consider doing with our old tech? And obviously we've got people that listen who are running a business who are put under quite significant stress and strains during this COVID. What would be your message to them as such? Because it would do they make the thing work harder as long as they service it? You know, what's their ideal route to make their tech last that little bit longer? And, you know, what would you advise that they do thereafter? They may not be big enough to give you 10,000 units, is my worry.
No, I do accept that. So if you have kind of customers that are sort of onesie twosies, then in terms of asset disposal, that's the first thing we need to consider. Obviously, you would start life at the your local tip, I suppose. Yeah. would be your first place. Would be not the best place, would be the first place where they would have a regulated throughput generally, but you'd be forgiven for thinking that, okay, I'll take it to the tip, I'll leave it there, and then it is disposed of in the right way through a recycling route, most likely, which is energy intensive, by the way.
Yeah.
And there are carbon negatives to that. However, it is disposed in the right way. Well, what we profess as a circular economy organization, we want to try and find ways to keep the asset alive for as long as possible. And what that does entail is it entails looking after the asset and its components so that they can live for a lot longer, and then save us as a society scraping more minerals from the ground, which are ever running thin on supply.
Yes. So, that brings me to an interesting point, because your website talks about carbon neutrality and also about sustainability. There's a very nice phrase in it. It says sustainability means different things to different people. I love that, because I think it is so true. What does sustainability mean to you and circular computing?
Okay. Well, for us, you have you go back to the three core pillars. You have the economic value balanced with the environmental value, balanced with the society value, and these three circles have to, like a Venn diagram, interlink.
Yeah.
And the nirvana is pointing the arrow right to the center where all of these three cross over. So for us as an organization, you know, we have a zero tolerance to e-waste, so we don't waste anything. We have a zero tolerance to carbon emissions. We're a carbon neutral organization, and the products that we serve back to our clients are carbon neutral. So they can there's a balance sheet effect about using our products to their organization. So there's more than an economic benefit, so to speak. We have a reforestation initiatives. So for every laptop we sell, we plant 5 trees. That helps offset some of the carbon in the usage phase of the laptop. And we invest in renewable energy sources to offset some of our additional carbon, which is at this stage inevitable, but it will become better as renewable energies become more voluminous in supply to us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds like a brilliant. I wish when I was buying PCs for local government, I'd known about you, seeing you've been around for the length of time. You mentioned you didn't mention before we went on air, so to speak, about the complexity of this sustainability. There's the bigger picture is sustainability, the circular economy, if you want to call it, although I try and wince at the phrase economy a bit. And you talked about you discussed the linear over the circular. I wonder if you could just enlighten, perhaps you explain it better than I'm putting there.
Yeah, of course. This is very relevant to the tech industry. So I won't talk about anything other than what I specialize in, if you know what I mean.
Fair enough. Yeah.
The tech industry relies on the brand new has been set up and relies upon a process called just in time. It's a just in time production process, which means that you don't hold stock. Nobody in the supply chain, from the minerals to the end customer, doesn't hold any stock, and by not holding stock, you're able to maximize your cost efficiencies. So there might be 150 components within a laptop. It only takes for one of those components, the supply of one of those components, to be affected by a global pandemic, and then it affects the rest, which then affects everything: the economics, the supply demand imbalances, the cost. So what we've seen is a choking, if you like, of the supply chain for laptops, because it was set up to work in a way that was linear. And so what we're able to bring to the table now, when we've been trying to get local and central government in the UK especially hooked into a circular computing methodology, which is keep the asset alive, you know. Some people might say sweat the asset, but at some point put it into a remanufacturing state so that the components that are broken or are weak can be renewed and then fed back into the system so they can elongate the life. And we have assets, so there's one of my colleagues uses that, one of our products. It's 9 years old. It's been remanufactured 3 times, still does the job fantastically well.
Yeah.
It's in the cloud. It's, you know, it's fine. So that's a 2011 machine.
So I mean, extending the life of anything has got to be the first port of call, isn't it? Because as you say, we've only got 100% of what we can't use it. Once it's gone, it's gone. And so if we continue to draw stuff out of the earth, we will eventually run out of essential materials. And unless we get and start mining from our existing product, we're going to be lost, really. We're going to be doomed to having no tech whatsoever. So I mean, it brings me on to perhaps your recommendation that you might have, any recommendations that you might have for our listeners that you relating to the circular economy.
I would say that, I mean, the circular economy is a big, deep, and sustainability is a really big, wide space. And this year, of all years, is going to be really busy.
Yeah.
So whether you're talking sustainability or circular economy or net zero, whatever those things are, I think it's important for individuals to know what it means to them and what they're prepared to not compromise on. So as an example, it might be that I want you to wear a pair of secondhand jeans because you don't have to buy a new pair of jeans, and therefore you save on whatever that supply chain looks like. The pair of jeans I give you are held together by nothing more than a few strands. You know, you won't compromise going out looking like you don't want to look. So you have to. There has to be a line to where you can get maximum sustainability without being compromised as a user.
Yes. Yeah. Do you think that's an interesting point? Do you think we're the consumer has become uncompromising to a certain extent, as much that they always want the new, they always want the fastest, they always want the better, the sleeker, the whizziest device, or the best, most slashed pair of jeans that you can buy nowadays?
Well, it's an interesting one, because for me personally, when I understood what sustainability means to me,
yeah,
and what I'm not prepared to compromise on,
yeah,
then it doesn't become about me. It becomes about society. I'm not prepared to compromise on, for instance, unethical supply. So what does that actually mean? Do I know the suppliers I'm buying from, and do I know their ethical standards? So I'll make it my business to know that.
Yeah.
It might cost me a little bit more.
Yeah. Yep.
As sure as eggs are eggs, I'm not buying from a sweatshop, you know, from a producer. Of a well-known e-commerce site that's been, you know, in the news recently. You know, I'm not buying product from a place that I don't know that the board are totally all into a CSR or ESG kind of commitment, and that's a personal thing to me. I zero out my waste at home. For instance, I only buy renewable energies for my house, and there are certain things that I won't compromise on. And I have to be seen to be leading by example for me and my family.
Yeah.
And by so doing, it leaks into my commercial operations and so forth. So I think is to for the user to understand why am I buying only brand new? And there might be a really good reason, by the way. There might be a really good reason. But between now and the next decade, 2030, it's predicted we'll need four times world supply to feed our technology hunger. So yeah, we are going to run out.
Yeah.
If we're not careful and do something about it. So we need to be more innovative about how we think, about how we consume. And consumption, when you're producing, generally has a climate effect. So I see climate change and climate drivers being the force behind people thinking they have to think more sustainably.
That's a really poignant point there, is that first step in becoming more sustainable is understand what sustainability means to you, but your point there was what do you value, you know, what are your values, and therefore what are you not prepared to compromise on. And I think if people looked into that a little bit more personally, they might be quite surprised as what they don't value. I think the COVID pandemic has kind of helped that to a certain extent. People have, you know, people are, I just want quick food, and have suddenly started gardening, you know. So the people that said, I have to have the most up-to-date fashion, haven't bought a piece of clothing in 12 months. Mm-hmm. And it has skewed our perception of what we found we needed, we thought we needed to survive in this consumerist world. So I do like that. Briefly, we mentioned the circular economy. And economy is a word, as I said earlier, it can turn a few people off. We perhaps want to have more of a circular lifestyle. But you mentioned to me a book that you have, or you would point people towards, perhaps to recommend for them to read on the circular economy.
Yeah, as a friend of the business is a lady called Catherine Wheatman.
Okay.
And she published her book, How to Build a More Resilient, Competitive and Sustainable Business, a circular economy handbook. It launched in December. I have no problem promoting this book, even though it's not mine. And Catherine's a really well studied author in the context of the circular economy.
Okay, that's great. And that's good for the business. That's good for the businessman, really, isn't it? Or the business person, should I say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's brilliant. We're trying to not appeal necessarily wholly to business people, but we recognise there's a lot of business people like Nathan, listening to our show. So you kind of want to put a balance in there.
Yeah. The thing is that everyone's a business person. You know, we do, we have an education course that we wrote about sustainability for teachers to help teach children about sustainability.
Oh, brilliant.
And the idea being that they would then, it was part school, part home, as they would go home and then they would teach their parents about sustainability, about is there a leaking tap? You know, are the lights on? You know, in my house, I'm constantly running around the house turning my lights off. My children, you know, we kind of have this sort of like carousel of lights on, lights off. You know, do they know when recycling day is? You know, do they know the difference between what you can recycle, what you can't? And at the end of the day, you get a fridge certificate. You know, I'm a sustainability ambassador. And then when we trialled it before COVID, we actually planted a tree in the school grounds as a recognition of their year of sustainability. So it isn't about the business people, it's about the individual thinking differently and taking their thoughts to work.
And I think from a consumer perspective, we need to hunt out the businesses that are doing this.
Yeah. There's no doubt whatsoever that if you say to somebody, which is why I love my job, if you have the chance to provide a better tomorrow for future generations, would you take it? Yes, I would. With that in mind, then, can I tell you about this? You know, like for instance, I am this year, I'm making a B hotel, Airbnb, Steve's Airbnb, and I'm going to record it. And it's not for honeybees, it's for the solitary bees that are they're super pollinators. They are the super spreaders of the honey world, of the pollinating world.
Yeah.
And we know that they are important to our existence.
Yes, yeah.
And you can make them out of like an old flower pot on a bamboo stick.
Yes,
yeah. And that's it. So I talk about stuff. I don't talk about computers, Russ. I just talk about stuff like, if you could take the chance to create a better tomorrow, why wouldn't you? And it's just starting to get into my central government contacts. You know, we're going to be part of COP26. Boris Johnson's taking us in with Alok Sharma, who's just been appointed president full time, you know, and they're going to be saying, you know, because if you produce three brand new laptops, if you buy three brand new laptops, you are responsible for one 3-bedroom house equivalent of CO2. That's what you're emitting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's bonkers, isn't it?
So it, the climate change, circular economy, sustainable consumption and production, which is SDG 12 and SDG 13. SDG 12, if you look at the global rankings, which is green, amber, red, that's the column that's red in every country.
Yeah.
Because they haven't made the transition between, right, to become carbon net zero, I have to be consuming more sustainably. But that's about to be the transition.
Yeah. I was quite surprised how lacking we were in that latest score, in that latest sustainability report from the UN, as a UK, just looking at the UK. But then you look at you realise that we were probably better than many. But it's shocking that we're just not thinking about this stuff. We're not transitioning fast enough. Really.
But that's only because the behaviour, human behaviour and perception, it needs to change. And what COVID has done is made people almost like, Jesus Christ. Right, now I can think quickly. Now I can think, I can move at pace and at scale. Even in the public sector, they're required to move at pace and scale, which they've never had to do before.
It's quite interesting because government has reacted incredibly fast to things. I mean, you'd never seen government move so fast, you know, especially central government. Parliament passing laws which were written 2 days ago is just
unheard of. Here's the thing, you know, we're close to the Cabinet Office, and the press give the Department for Education a real kicking for not delivering laptops. I can tell you this, they're not being made. So the department put on the supply chain, I want 1 million laptops for disadvantaged children. Well, you might as well said, I want 1 million diamond encrusted Rolls Royces. You can't get those either. You can't. Just because you put a purchase order for 1 million somethings on the supply chain doesn't mean that they're there. They're literally not being made. So everyone's blaming the Department for Education for not supplying product. It's like, yeah, but they don't exist. The supply chain's not used to.
This is a worldwide pandemic.
This is worldwide pandemic. They only make 160 million a year, and we want 1 million of them for just for the Department for Education, let alone for everybody else in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's an interesting time. And I think there will be big change this year. Big change.
What do you think, when you say big change, what do you think is going to happen?
I think there'll be, we'll get out of COVID. So we've at the moment, we've got an immediacy around the vaccination and getting everyone sorted out.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I don't think there'll be too much in the way of travel. There'll be a case of, right, what does Build Back Better mean? And that will then drive to the COP26 agenda. And so it'll go COVID, probably, in my opinion, at least, COVID to June, the vaccination wave one.
Yeah.
And I think we can just, however we want to hope about going away, I don't think that's going to happen this summer, because as of last Monday, France only had 500 people vaccinated, and 58% of France, I go to France, they don't want to get vaccinated.
Really?
So you've got this cross-border stuff going on.
And the anti-vaxxers and...
I think we'll get to June. I think there'll be investment in green. Making people think about if your house is, you see them, green mortgages. So if your house is sustainable, which doesn't help people like you and me that live in old houses, the more sustainable you're living, the less you pay in taxes and council rates and stuff like that. So you'll get the cost of living going up, but the actual cost of living going down. It'll do this.
Yeah. Okay. The reward. I mean, we aren't going to be earning. I mean, there will be a recovery, and I've seen there's been a recovery in manufacturing more than there's been a recovery in service industry, which is an interesting stat. I think it's like we lost 7%, and the manufacturing shot up to 12% increase when we came out of lockdown first time. Obviously, it's been devastated again.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's this really interesting switch that maybe the service industries that we've hung our hat on in Britain so much are probably not the thing to do so much, especially, you know, we yet to really feel what Brexit actually means to the UK or to the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, to be honest.
Yeah,
very interesting. And thanks to Steve Heskew for his thoughts there. Now for some quick eco tips. So we'd like to give people things they can take away from the show and go and do. So three things that listeners can go and do today. First up.
That sounded a bit rude. Three things you can go do today.
No, you can do today, and everybody can do these. One is, firstly, and we mentioned this before, but unsubscribe from newsletters and mailing lists. Every time you get sent an email or a circular, it uses energy. And that energy requires generation. And it might be tiny amounts, but if we all do this, we're going to save a significant amount. So number one, unsubscribe from all your newsletters and mailing lists. And number two, Russell?
Use technology instead to reduce the amount of paper you use. So if you're a book reader... Well, people still like to hold the book in their hand, and I do get it. But you know, if you're going to stop writing stuff down, stop using notepads, these are difficult things to do, but just reduce a little bit of your paper by turning to tech.
Yeah, I think the probably the easier one is don't print stuff out. You know, find a way of reading it on the screen or editing it on the screen. There's, you know, if somebody sends you an email, where is the need to print that out?
The one gripe I must have is having to do legal stuff in business. Many companies and government especially still want what they lovingly called as a wet signature.
Yeah.
And it has to be ink. And it is ridiculous, people. Absolutely. Legal courts, you need to stomp on this right now.
Legal
You're forcing us to print out rubbish anyway.
Need to change. There are other ways of proving who I am without me
scribbling,
making a mark on a bit of paper. Yeah. And number three, delete old files and emails. And similar to the first one, every piece of information that you store somewhere uses storage, which takes energy and power to store. And a lot of these things are stored in the cloud these days. You kind of don't know they're there necessarily, if it's in Dropbox or OneDrive or Google, wherever it is, it's stored. If you don't need it and you don't ever need to look at it, then delete it. And I think this is particularly true of email. And we know somebody that's very guilty of this. They'll store every single email they've ever received for the last 25 years. And there's just no need for it.
And to be honest, you're putting yourself at risk as well for other reasons. The one thing I would probably flag up here, and I've tried to do it myself, is when you go on holiday and you take 4,000 photographs because you can, and you hold your finger down to catch that hummingbird or the bees, and you take 1,400 shots all in with you on your phone.
In your burst, yep.
And they load up and you never clean them down and you never go through and find the really great shot. You are absolutely piling on the pounds when it comes to energy consumption. Yeah.
So there's our three tips for the week. And ask for listeners, do you have any eco tips that you'd like to share with our listeners? If you do, get in touch, either send us the tips or perhaps come on the show and tell us the tips yourself. But we'd love to hear from you. We'll be bringing you tips every week. A recommendation now, and this week it is a video recommendation. There's a documentary on the BBC available via the BBC iPlayer, so I think you can get to that in from most countries. But the program was a Horizon documentary called Feast for the Planet, and was interested in this because it had Mike Berners-Lee. Mike Berners-Lee, who is author of How Bad Are Bananas, which is the book we've mentioned on the show a number of times. And it made for a really interesting watch. The premise was that some minor celebrities had been invited to a restaurant for a three-course meal, and they had to choose the option from each course they thought was the most environmentally friendly with the smallest carbon footprint. And it wasn't nearly as easy as you might think. And it made for really, really interesting viewing. And
yeah, I don't want to give much away. But it's not just about it's meat, therefore it's bad.
Absolutely.
It's vegetables, therefore it's good.
Yeah, I mean,
an interesting discussion on soya.
There were some things that the asparagus thing surprised me. The other thing that surprised me was that Parmesan has a bigger carbon footprint than bacon.
Yeah,
cheese bigger than bacon. I thought that was just incredible. I thought, wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And the other one that was really surprising was when wine is shipped in containers.
Yeah,
it comes in a huge plastic balloon, bladdered, so the whole container is filled with wine. There's no packaging or bottles or anything. It's
the biggest wine box you could ever buy.
It is. It's just a huge box of wine, which is just
40 tons of it.
Yeah. So really interesting. Watch that one.
Yeah, it is. The one thing that stuck really with me is that, as with when you would go to any restaurant, you look at the thing and there's a few things that you won't eat. Now, if you're a vegan, it's quite small. And what they did is they gave the vegan pretty well only one choice, which is probably the case in many restaurants.
Yep.
Either they have to pass altogether or they is Hobson's choice and they get what they get.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting outcome, that if you're stuck, if you have that dietary restriction or dietary choice.
Yep.
Then it can come up with some troubling results.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, go and give that a watch. Feast for the Planet, it was called.
Steve, I'd like to do fact or fake with you now, if I may. Yeah. I will not damage your reputation, honestly, because I
don't need help in that.
you'll do all the damage you can do. So I'll ask you a statement. You just have to tell me whether you think my statement is fact or whether you think it's a fake.
Okay.
All right. So the first one, and our subject is e-waste, funnily enough. So just 10% of e-waste, and for people who don't know what e-waste is, that's electronic and electrical equipment, just 10% of e-waste is actually recycled. Is that a fact or is that a fake?
Fake.
Fake. Well done. Congratulations. Ooh. So, however, is I've seen figures in my research of 12.5% to 20%. It's not brilliant.
No.
You know, we do all this recycling with, and e-waste still ends up in landfill. It's quite bizarre, really. Okay, 1-0. If all so, here's an interesting one. A bit of extrapolation for you to do. If all e-waste was laptops, worldwide, we would be throwing out 650 per second.
I would like to think that's fake, but I don't think it is.
So are you going to say fact or fake?
Fact, I'll say fact.
Oh, you should have stuck with fake, but for the wrong reasons. Probably. Horrifying figure of e-waste of 50 million tons of e-waste in 2020 is the estimate. And that equates to about 1,000 laptops a second.
Oh, wow.
Obviously it isn't all laptops. There's washing machines and mobile phones and all sorts of stuff in there. But I think just sometimes you just, what's 50 million tons of e-waste look like?
Yeah. 1,000 laptops a second is what it looks like.
So, thinking about this e-waste a little bit more, it's the LCD TVs and computer screens, along with the good old cathode ray tube, which are the most hazardous forms of e-waste. Is that fact or fake?
Fact.
Absolutely. You probably know better than I do on that one. What's involved in an LCD screen. Good. So you're doing well. 2-1. Two more to go. 67% of the world's population have a mobile device. That's a smartphone and cell phone included. Is that fact or fake? 67%.
Fake, I think.
Fake? You think it's lower or higher?
I think it's higher than that.
Well, it's actually a fact. That is the stat currently. 4.88 billion of 7.83 billion people have a mobile device or one sort of another. Now, a lot of that, under, I think it's around about 48% are smartphones and the rest are on smell phone. That would be good technology. So, cell phones, coining an Americanism. Okay, so to all, this is the decider. There are 362 chemicals in an LCD screen, and nearly 100 of them are potentially toxic. Is that a fact or a fake?
I think that is a fact.
And you win, fact or fake. You see, I told you I wouldn't damage your reputation. I had to use the word potentially toxic because it's only toxic if it enters back into the soil. But a lot of these toxins break down and have very high mobility. I saw a fascinating thing here, though. I'll read this out. Researchers collected dust samples from 7 buildings in China, a cafeteria, student dorm, classroom, hotel, home lab, and electronics repair shop. Nearly half of the 53 samples tested positive for liquid crystal particles, which are supposed to stay in the screen after manufacturing, even in places where there were no LCD devices at the time of collection.
Wow.
I read it and went, that's bonkers. We're breathing that in.
Yeah.
And we just, from the previous fact, saw they are potentially toxic. So we keep on unveiling this kind of... revealing this onion of dangers that we've created for ourselves, didn't we, through our manufacturing, through our propagation of technology. And I do find it fascinating, these facts. So thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate your time and expertise, and look forward to pointing people towards the circular computing website on our show page.
Thank you very much indeed for your time.
And finally, before we go, I love this story. A woman has worn the same dress for 100 days and is vowing never to buy any clothes again. It's brilliant. So Sarah, her name is Sarah Robbins Cole. She's certainly got her money's worth out of her long-sleeved, knee-length black dress.
Yes.
It's brilliant. Worn it for work, worn it out walking, worn it to lie on the sofa, wore it on Christmas Day. So you've worn it constantly for 100 days in a row. And it wasn't because she's a little bit crazy. It was because she might be, I don't know. But, I'm not casting any aspersions, but
just don't judge
she,
it. Yeah.
She was taking part in a 100-day challenge, which was you know, people saying wear the same piece of clothing for 100 days. A clothing brand called Wooland set the challenge, and I like this. Participants were allowed to wash and dry the dress overnight, but if they were awake, they were expected to wear it.
Pajamas and all sorts.
That's right. You open your eyes. Oh my! Where's my dress? Where's my dress? Put the dress on.
Oh no! The dryer hasn't come on.
She's a lecturer at a college, and so she said she forewarned her college students that would be taking the challenge because otherwise they'd be seeing me in the same dress every day.
Yeah, she did manage to come up with 100 different looks because she's got an Instagram page with every one of her. So she was allowed to accessorise, obviously. So there was cardigans and jumpers. And
anyway,
of course, it was a little bit cold in certain times of the year.
Food for thought. There's a 100-day challenge.
Yeah, I think, well, obviously, it is there just to say you don't need as many clothes as you think you do.
No, absolutely.
And actually, 100 day dress still looks as good as it did and pretty well on day one. And so, you know, we're not wearing them out in 100 days of wearing. So I think it's a really good challenge. Good old wool and for trying it. Cause in theory they're cutting their nose off a little bit because people won't buy so many of their products.
Well, if any listeners are thinking of wearing something for 100 days, let us know. Let us know what it is you're wearing for 100 days. We'd love to hear.
Keep it clean again.
A 100-day hat. 100-day shoes, socks, 100-day socks.
I'm wearing my 100-day shirt, as you'll see from my interview with Steve.
Brilliant. Anyway, if you've enjoyed the show, please do go and visit the show page at greenelephant.show. There you can find links, as usual, to all the stories we've discussed, instructions on how to leave a review, where to subscribe, and find us on all the user providers. Please do go and visit and subscribe, as it really helps us continue to make the show and hopefully keep you entertained. It keeps us entertained anyway. So hopefully see you at greenelephant.show or on social at greenelipod. But until next time, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week.